Welcome to Panelcast, Forbidden Panels podcast featuring comic books, video games, and movie news and reviews. And now, your host, AJ Herrera.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 170 of the Panelcast. This is Anthony, back with your perennial host, AJ.
In this episode, Anthony and I will be reviewing John Wick 2, Electric Boogaloo, as well as discussing how we got to relive great memory from our past in seeing the original Ghost in the Shell on the big screen this past week. All of that plus more news than you can shake an Anthony at right after this.
Hey guys, this is Dan.
And this is Jen.
We're your hosts on The Road Ahead.
Add us on Facebook and find out about some of the interesting, odd, and amazing places you can visit on your next road trip.
Just go to www.facebook.com/The Road Ahead Series. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Road Ahead Series, or simply follow us at Road Ahead Series.
Thanks, and we'll see you on The Road Ahead. Now back to the Panelcast.
Welcome back, everybody. It is time again to catch you up on some of the news that's caught our attention over the past couple of weeks. To get things started, how about I pass it over to you, AJ?
No.
Too bad.
I don't want to.
Don't care.
You're so mean to me, I swear.
Sometimes.
Marvel Studios Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 has already achieved a rare honor during its test screening run. Not only has it scored higher than any Marvel Studios movie in the company's 9-year history, but it managed to get a perfect 100 out of 100 score. Insiders confirmed to Heat Vision that the extremely rare, if not unprecedented, score bested the high 90s marks of the previous top Marvel scores, Iron Man 3 and The Avengers. Unlike most films, though, testing scores for Marvel films aren't random. Audiences for their films are called from a select pool of recruits and are basically dubbed friends and family screenings. And they've done this ever since the first Iron Man in order to prevent leaks. That means these perfect marks aren't necessarily able to be compared to other Marvel movies. Test scores also don't necessarily gauge box office or reviews either. More like cinema scores. They best determine if the audience is engaged and with the material and it meets their expectations. Examples of other high scores include Deadpool, The Conjuring, Argo, and Forrest Gump. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is scheduled to open in cinemas on May 5th. Cinco de Mayo, which means nobody would be sober in that theater. Maybe that's what they were replicating when they showed the test version, and everybody was drunk and loved it. Not that I doubt that Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is going to be anything short of epic and awesome, if Part 1 was any indication whatsoever. But still, it got 100 out of 100. I believe that score. Looking at the other examples that they've given, Deadpool scored a 96, The Conjuring a 91, Argo a 90, and Forrest Gump an 88. To see that it was scoring 100 out of 100, I can kind of believe it. At the same time, it excites me to know that this awesome movie is coming out this year. So,
yeah, that's a big deal for me, too. It's one of those, as long as they, I can believe those scores, if I can believe the fact that they kept to the feel of the original Guardians of the Galaxy. So if they just followed up what they managed to do successfully in the original Guardians of the Galaxy, then those scores make perfect sense to me. And that gets me excited to want to go out and, you know, well, it's Cinco de Mayo. I'll probably still be sober, but I want to go out and catch it myself.
Let's be honest. We'll be seeing it May 4th.
That's true.
So we won't be affected by the Cinco de Mayo, but we'll see how things go between now and then. What have you got, Anthony?
What I've got is that as of last week, Ben Affleck stepped down in his role to direct the upcoming The Batman film. It's a project that he was key in the development of. He actually co-wrote the script with Geoff Johns, and originally he was signed on to star in and direct at the same time. And I'm guessing with everything else going on for him, directing that film, that project became too much, so he stepped down as of last week. As of right now, Matt Reeves is who Warner Brothers has offered the project to. Matt Reeves is the helmer for Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and he's also directing War for the Planet of the Apes, which is due out a little bit later this year. I can't remember the date on that one. So, it's one of those things that it's interesting because a new director could also mean a new direction for the project. So Affleck is still going to have all kinds of influence because, you know, he's producing, he helped develop this project, but he isn't going to be the person behind the camera deciding on those decisions. So I'm interested. I'm interested to see if Matt Reeves goes forward with it, picks it up and runs with it, and if he's able, if he decides to change direction. I'm sure we'll be hearing about that in the next couple of days.
Well, I mean, you got to look at it this way. Matt Reeves is used to directing a lot of people in motion capture outfits, and in doing so with that kind of experience, we can look forward to a very CGI-heavy motion caption type Justice League film or Batman film. What that means as far as Batman goes, I mean, it's better than Zack Snyder, I suppose.
But I won't argue with that. But it's one of those, Batman is one of those that, for me, I prefer that more visceral feel of actual physical effects to CGI. But I'm not going to out and out discount what he could do with this.
Right. I mean, I agree with you in the real effects department would be awesome, but I don't see Ben Affleck, you know, crawling high on a skyscraper and being all that confident, unlike Christian Bale, who had no problem doing that shit whatsoever. But at the same time, I mean, kudos for Affleck recognizing the fact that his directing is taking a shit lately. And hiding behind the highly popular vote of, I want to be able to concentrate and give Batman the best acting that I can give it, instead of just admitting that his directing and acting has been shit lately, is, you know, good for him for recognizing that. So that gives me hope in the movie.
We will just have to see. I'm still me, so I'm still skeptical of anything Ben Affleck does, and, you know, the recent trend that he's turned in hasn't helped, but so long as he doesn't ruin Batman for me, I'm okay with it.
Well, you know, I loved Argo. I loved, oh my god, I can't remember the name of it. The Town. He was great in The Town. However, his latest movie that I just recently saw, Live by Night or something, was absolute crap. It was just bad. So maybe he needs to take a step back and just breathe and try not to do everything. He's already writing Batman.
Yeah.
You know? He's already helping to write Batman, so
at this point, step back and focus on portraying the character.
Right. He doesn't have to do anything, everything.
Yeah. All right. What have you got?
Well, Marvel Television has announced, we reported on the last episode how one of my favorite comic books, The Runaways, is going to film. And we reported about how they had already cast the actual Runaway characters. Right? We did report that, didn't we?
Yeah.
If not, well then, we're going to pretend that we reported it.
Yes.
And you're going to pretend to have heard us say so.
Absolutely. That's what you got to do, because we did. I'm sure of it.
Exactly.
Just don't fact check me on it, but I'm sure of it.
Marvel Television has announced that a large group of actors, including some alum from the likes of Buffy, Alias, and 24, are to play the Pride on Hulu's Marvel's Runaways series. In comics, the Pride is a group of supervillains who control crime on the West Coast. The Runaways are their children, who, upon learning the secrets of their parents, take off on their own. Marvel previously announced, and I'm not even going to go through these names again because I can't pronounce any of them, but that the children were already locked in and the actors to portray them were ready to go. Now, the Pride cast consists of James Marsters, Kip Pardue, Annie Wershing, Kevin Weissman, Ever Carradine, Ryan Sands, Angel Parker, Brittany Ishibashi, and James Yagashi, and Bridget Brana. Whew. Now, for those of you who may recognize those names, James Marsters portrayed Spike on Buffy. Kip Pardue was the pretty hit boy on Remember the Titans. He was the quarterback that came in, the pretty boy. Kevin Weissman, if you're familiar with the Alias series, he was He was the nerd guy there. Ever Carradine, of course, is David Carradine's sister. So yeah, a full breakdown of each of these characters can be found at Marvel.com. Runaways is being executive produced by the series showrunners, writers Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage, along with Jeff Loeb and Jim Chory. No premiere date has yet to be set. We just recently read Volume 1 again for the comic book club that Forbidden Panel puts together. It's called the Alien Empire Comic Book Club. Look us up. It's pretty fun. And in doing so, I once again was brought into this world and just swallowed up by it. I couldn't stop at Volume 1. I just had to read more and read more and read more. That's what good the series is. So if they don't at least give it that kind of attention to the show, then I see that it's going to fail. So,
I mean, they're working on the name recognition thing, but you're right. It's one of those things that name recognition alone isn't going to save this project. So if they don't, you know, wholeheartedly back it, then it's going to be more than a little bit problematic to keep it going.
And don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of James Marsters, but having him as the biggest celebrity you have in the cast, it's not really instilling a lot of confidence.
It's also, before we get too deep into this, I think we debated the whole Hulu as a source for this and Hulu's original projects history and things the last time we brought this up. It's at least it's filtering back into my head. It may have been a different project, but yeah, I mean,
could have been a conversation you had with yourself.
That's very possible. I have lots and lots of those, most of them out loud. But James Marsters, his name's very recognizable to a subset of people. If you're not part of that subset of people, and you know you have him as your big name, then it's like if you didn't watch Buffy, if you didn't watch Angel, if you weren't a huge fan of either of those shows, then you're going to be like, who's this guy? So it might be a little bit rough.
Plus, you know, you mentioned James Marsters, you think Joss Whedon, you think the Avengers, this is Marvel's Runaways. Maybe there might be a cameo directing spot in their forum, which would be kind of awesome on the Buffy fan front. But we'll see. What else you got, Anthony?
What I've got is something that's kind of interesting. It's a little bit all over, so I'm going to give you the pieces here.
I have to get a sewing for that.
Really? Nah, I'm good.
Okay.
If you haven't been paying attention, then you won't have noticed quite yet that Universal Pictures is planning to kind of go on a monster movie tear. The first entry in that tear is slated to be their reboot of The Mummy, with Tom Cruise taking on the leading role there. They've also got The Invisible Man, The Wolf Man, and Bride of Frankenstein in some fashion coming down the pike. Now, the interesting thing right now is that the writers for another project in that series that they're rebooting, Van Helsing, has a movie that you saw recently, AJ. Eric Heisserer and John Spates are writing script for the upcoming Van Helsing. Heisserer is the person who wrote Arrival, and Spates wrote Passengers. I think you saw both of those.
Both of them were crap.
Which worries me a little bit. Now, Heisserer was talking about why he was eager to take on this project, and what he said was, well, I guess the biggest thing that's already been said is it's contemporary, it's a modern day reimagining, which means we're not going to be seeing, you know, old school Transylvania and lots of running around on horseback and whatnot. I can talk about my emotional state of what I've been passionate about or sometimes frustrated by, or the number of films where we find an extraordinary character with superhuman abilities that becomes a hero to solve a problem that a normal person cannot solve. And I was eager to try and buck that trend and showcase someone who had no extraordinary powers, just resourcefulness and will and kind of a stubbornness who's able to tackle some of these bigger problems. Because I don't like the idea that we're infusing our public and our pop culture with the idea that only super people can solve the world's problems. I like the idea of the everyday hero stepping up to the plate and getting things fixed.
Every Tom Cruise movie ever.
It's not like we don't have a huge swath of films like that. It's just superhero films have been doing quite well lately. So, I mean, I don't know the entirety of Heiser's history as a screenwriter. What I do know is I have liked the Van Helsing character since his first incarnation in the Dracula stories. You know, before comics, before everything, when Bram Stoker originally crafted his vampire hunter. So, I don't know what he's going to do with it. I don't know where Universal is going to take this, but the fact that his last movie, the last movie he was responsible for penning, was so bad, I remember your review on that one, AJ. You were working very, very hard to find something positive to say.
Was that The Passengers, or was that
Arrival? That was Arrival. Yeah.
Now, take in mind, Arrival is up for an Oscar. So.
Yeah, I know, but I've noticed the disconnect over the years as to what the people actually enjoy and what gets nominated for awards. And Van Helsing should be something that people just have a lot of fun with. So I'm not going to out and out bash this guy's writing chops because, hey, he may knock this one out of the park. But between...
And I might get taller.
Between his last film, what I've seen of the first in this slate of films that Universal has coming up, The Mummy... I'm not enthused by this. I mean, I can't say that the last Van Helsing film was all that good either. So, man, I want someone to do it right. I guess that's what I'm saying. I really want someone to take this character and do it justice. And much as I might like Hugh Jackman, that Van Helsing just wasn't right for me.
I liked that Van Helsing.
Really? I didn't get any enjoyment out of it.
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. I knew it wasn't going to be a masterpiece or anything like that. But it was fun. It was just good, old-fashioned fun. And, you know, Kate Beckinsale.
I guess they screwed with so many things that it just kind of threw me off. You know? It's like they were trying to invent reasons for things that they didn't need to invent reasons for.
It's like,
just let him go out and kill vampires, you know? All right, before I get too heavy into the ranting, what else have you got, AJ?
Stuff.
Things? Or just stuff?
Stuff. Fox's still untitled X-Men series has scored its first official cast member, and at the same time in doing so has given away what I think this series is going to be about. They have cast Blair Redford taking on the role of a character named Sam. The series focuses on two ordinary parents who discover their children possess mutant powers and are forced to go on the run. The Redford's character is described as a strong-headed Native American leader of an underground network. Now, aside from the Native American stuff that I just said, you hear the name Sam and you hear the fact that it's a family of mutants. Makes me think Sam Guthrie, a.k.a. Oh my God, I can't remember. Cannonball from the New Mutants. And his family, his whole Guthrie clan, which was big in the New Mutants and X-Men franchise. So hearing that they're going to be a family of normal people with mutant-powered children running all over town just makes me think of the Guthrie family and that it might be them that we're seeing, except, you know, that they're Native American, so it would be one who balls out of a cannon or something. would be their last name. But having not seen Blair Redford and not knowing his acting background, you can expect a bunch of B-list actors, new people to the acting scene to be populating Fox's X-Men series, because I'm sure they want to be able to save money on casting and be able to use that money on production and effects and the occasional cameo from a big-name character or actor to come across. So,
yeah. I'm still scared about this. I am. I mean, getting a live-action X-Men TV series, the idea is cool. What Fox has done with the X-Men over the years makes me worry. And what Fox has done to some of their television series over the years, just in general, means that this might be one of those things where, you know, they shoot an entire series, we get 3 or 4 episodes, the ratings are low, they pull it, and then they go, oh, we need something to fill time for the rest of the season, they shuffle it to another date. And so even if there's actual potential in this, Fox, just as a network, might be killing it.
Maybe.
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. So I think that wraps us up for news this time around, unless you've got something else, AJ.
I just wanted to mention real quick that we here at Forbidden Panel recently heard about the passing of Battlestar Galactica star Richard Hatch, and we wanted to extend our condolences to his friends and family. I personally want to apologize because I once had a run-in with Richard Hatch, and I deeply offended him, so I apologize for that, sir. To you and your families, you have our deepest thoughts and well wishes.
Greatest of respect for that one. So, on that note, we will wrap up our news segment, and after this break, we will be back with our review of John Wick 2 and a bit of discussion about our joyous experience of getting to witness the original Ghost in the Shell on the big screen.
Hi everyone, we'll be back after Robert this break. Here at QVC Toys and More, inviting you to visit our store in Victorville. We are the premier comic, toy, and collectible store in the High Desert. Sign up for our comic pull list service and never miss an issue again. Like us on Facebook to stay up to date on sales, promotions, and events. Mention this podcast in the store to receive 10% off your total purchase. QBC Toys and More. Yes, we have candy too. Located on Hesperia Road next to the Tri-City Car Wash.
And welcome back, everybody. So, here we are in our review section. Yay! We know you guys all care about our opinion. And our opinion is, you're right, you should care. So, let's start us off. We went and saw Ghost in the Shell, the original. Anthony, why don't you fill the people in, if you know what I mean.
I don't know how to take that.
That's what she said.
It's one of those, you could mean a whole lot of things by that, but I'm going to stick with, you know, focusing on the anime. Well, the reasoning behind this screening was a little bit nostalgia, a little bit of geeking out, a little bit of preparation, because the live-action version of Ghost in the Shell is due out next month. So I know we've talked about this before, and I'm sorry if you're getting sick of hearing the overarching rundowns, but let me give you a quick one real fast so you know what we're talking about in case you're not familiar with Ghost in the Shell. In the year 2029, advances in cybernetics allow people to replace nearly all of their body parts and organs with robotics. Through these prosthetics, the weak are made strong and the dying are given new life. Public Security Section 9 of Nihama City, a diverse team of AI, cyborgs, and unmodified humans must investigate cases of corruption and terrorism. Major Motoko Kusanagi has full body prosthetics owing to a childhood accident. She, her second-in-command Bato, and information specialist Ishikawa have been assigned an important task, to investigate a hacker known only as the Puppet Master. But as Motoko and her team discover, things are never so simple. That is a broad coverage of Ghost in the Shell. Now,
I don't think they like it when you call them broads.
What, huh? I'm toasters? Now, this was originally produced back in 1995. So, you know, we're 20 years on from the original release of this film, which is kind of cool to get a chance to see it on the big screen after 20 years. I don't know where to begin. I mean, the story is the story. I watched it many, many years ago, and I've watched it in the years in between. Granted, I don't think I've watched it in the last 5 or 7 or so. So I'm very familiar with the story, but the experience itself was really cool. And after getting to sit through this film again and then seeing the trailers for the upcoming live action film, it's like right away I noted things that it's like, oh, they kept to that, but man, they're going to have to change so much of this story, because the Ghost in the Shell animated films there was a series of films. It wasn't just the one. So I don't know. I don't know where to go.
The thing is that we are led to believe that the Ghost in the Shell film that's coming out, the live action version, is supposed to be following the anime, the original movie that we had just seen. Unfortunately, there's a lot of stuff going on in the trailers that leads us to believe otherwise, such as the exploration of her past. We never see that in the movie. In fact, she's okay with who she is in the film. And her focus is the ghost, the puppet master. So seeing all this added footage and all this different stuff makes us wonder exactly what direction they're taking it with, if they're going to go to the way of the series, or if they're going to be writing their own backstory and whatnot. So it'll be interesting to see. One thing that I do have to say is the anime holds up, for me at least.
For me too.
The graphics and everything may have been a bit dated, but it was still just awesome to watch. And the overabundance of nipples in the movie, it automatically depressed me in knowing that we're not going to get that much in the live-action version.
And see, I didn't have that feeling at all.
And for that, I say shame. Shame on you, Hollywood. Let the nipples free.
But you're right. It does speak to something that was impeccably well made when, over 20 years from its original release date, it is still enjoyable to
especially to go in out the big screen.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I never got, you know, it was home video by the time I was even aware of it when it came out, because 1995, I was what, 13? So yeah, it was on video by the time I originally saw it. Not that it ever would have gotten a big screen debut in the U.S.
I saw it on the big screen.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. But 20 plus years on, and story holds up. Yes, graphics are dated. Some of the animation techniques are dated. But it's
some of the technology that they use within the film itself is a little bit dated.
That's true, too, because we've advanced technologically so far. But the story itself holds up. The cityscapes still look cool, even if the animation's a little bit dated. Just the designs and everything. It was a fun ride, and it was really cool to get that kind of preparation for before going into the live action next month. It's like, yes, we're going to be able to more adequately pick holes in the story where they made changes or with the differences that they made, but it also leaves it fresh in the mind so that we can actually kind of compare the two side by side to say, okay, if this is the beginning of your cinematic universe for live action Ghost in the Shell, how well does that compare as a starting point to what spawned a sequel, prequels, multiple television series
and
in
video
the
games.
Animated. Yeah. I mean, Ghost in the Shell is everywhere. So it's cool to have that as kind of under our belts. So I'd say it was more than worth the cost of admission for me.
Now, recently, the star of the live-action version, Scarlett Johansson, had been getting a lot of flack for the fact that Hollywood seems to be whitewashing the main character by casting her as the major. Well, recently she went on to address this in a quote. Now, when I read this, it's kind of like, you got to follow along. It's kind of funny. She says, quote, "I certainly would never presume to play another race of a person. Diversity is important in Hollywood, and I would never want to feel like I was playing a character that was offensive. Also, having a franchise with a female protagonist driving it is such a rare opportunity. Certainly, I feel the enormous pressure of that, the weight of such a big property on my shoulders." End quote. Basically, she didn't address it for shit.
Nope. She sidestepped.
Yep. The girl playing a Russian spy in one of the most popular film franchises ever is saying that she would never play the race of another person. And that's it. She doesn't address the whitewashing at all. So, yeah, there you go.
She's kind of backed into a corner, though, isn't she?
Yeah.
I mean, she's already shot the film. It's due out next month. She's responsible for promotion of the film at this point. So, essentially, anything that she says that can be politically charged will end up negatively impacting box office earnings, which is going to screw her. It's like,
she knew what she was doing when she signed on.
Oh, hell yeah.
What she was doing. Like, you know.
Character's named Motoko Kusanagi.
Well, the problem is they're whitewashing, and they're also making her more Asian in the movie. So they're CGIing some Asianness into her.
You're shitting me.
Yeah. But I mean, they did that in, oh God, what was the last Wachowski movie that came out, the multiple throughout time thing? I can't remember.
Oh jeez, I didn't even see that one.
But I mean, they did that to one of the actors in there, and it's been done before, so it's not really that big of a deal. It's just that you couldn't find an Asian actress to portray the role, you had to go and whitewash it. And then in your reply to the whitewashing accusations, you just agree that Hollywood is a diverse place.
It's like, really? If it was that diverse, it wouldn't have been all that hard to find a big name Asian actress to play this role.
Right.
It's like, for me.
I mean, other than Tia Carrera, you know.
Ever since I heard the announcement of the casting for this one, I was like, wow, that's all name recognition right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's what she was put in this role for. She's going to look good nearly naked, and people know the name.
So.
Yeah, all right. Without diving too heavily into that one, how about you get us started on John Wick 2?
John Wick 2. Man, now without giving away too much, if you've seen John Wick 1, you know the story of John Wick. Keanu Reeves in a role that we can finally get behind. You know, I'm saying that having seen and enjoyed a lot of his movies. So basically, the premise of John Wick is Keanu Reeves was the hitman to end all hitmans. The hitman of which all hitmen hold their standard to and fail and come up miserably short. He retires because he finds the love of his life. He gets married. He settles down. She dies. He buys a dog as kind of a companion replacement to help him deal with the loss of his wife. And a week after all of this stuff, somebody kills the dog and steals his car. And he decides to go on a rampage. So that was Volume 1. Volume 2 basically picks up exactly where Volume 1 left off and doesn't hold back. Volume 1 was no nonsense, no bullshit, hardcore hitting, shooting, killing, death, murder, death, kill filming. It was Keanu Reeves' action film at his best, one of the best action films I've seen him in. And we saw him in The Matrix, okay? So the fact that he did everything real time, real stunts, all on his own, and he learned how to handle himself, handle a gun, and handle people one-on-one is beyond commendable. So John Wick 2 starts up, and it's the same thing all over again. with more motivation and more story and more in-depth detail. And more murder, death, kills. Just an unbelievable amount of craziness. I'm just going to repeat myself. Anthony, chime in anytime here, man.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. You were hitting all the salient points, so I was just going to let you keep rolling. But this, it's, yeah, if part one did it anything for you at all, if you had just had fun watching John go on his rampage through nice Russian crime family to, let's see, yeah, avenge death of dog and theft of car, this is so much better. I mean, I'm trying to avoid spoilers here, so I don't want to get too specific, but he's got a bit more in the way of motivation this time around, and he, it's beautiful. I can't do this without spoiling it, you know?
We can't talk about it. Let's just put it this way. If you saw part one and you enjoyed part one, you will absolutely love part two, because at no point in time does it take a break from being John Wick. Like, this is a John Wick movie for sure, and it leaves it open for a part three. Wide open, and I'm excited about it. I want to see how it's going to happen. So, having said that, knowing that we're giving it like a 4 big fat thumbs up, we can't really go into too much more without spoiling anything whatsoever. So, there's really not much more we can say, to be honest with you.
Not without giving away core components, damn it. I don't want to ruin this for anybody, because I want everybody out there to go see it. It's like, it is a fantastic example of what an action movie could and should be. It's car chases, it's foot chases, it's fist fights, knife fights, gun fights. It's out and out insanity and worth every single minute. I just... okay. No spoilers, so get out there, go see it for yourself, and have a freaking blast with it.
Yeah, that's pretty much all we can say. Great film, lots of fun, does not disappoint. Ruby Rose needs to stop being in every single fucking movie I'm seeing in the past 2 months. So, right, so having said that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up a review section. I'm sorry again that we're kind of short on this one, but it's John Wick, dude. You know what you're getting into. So we'll go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap everything up.
Happy llama, sad llama, mentally disturbed llama, super llama, drama llama, big fat mama llama.
Happy llama. Hi, this is Joey Labartnick, and you can check out my latest comic, A Man Called Kraken, at comixology.com. And be sure to keep checking the Forbidden Panel website, because you're going to be able to see my artwork in the upcoming Volume 2. Of Forbidden Tales.
It's me, bitch. Yes, I am that llama.
And welcome back, everybody. It is that sad, sad time again for us to sign off of another episode of the panel cast.
170.
Yeah. Well, you've been around for a good long while. I don't remember how long I've been here.
You just call me old.
Vaguely. Regardless, we appreciate all of you sticking through with us to enjoy this episode, and you know, we love hearing your feedback. So if you've got commentary, you know, since we couldn't go into the spoilers related to John Wick, we'd love to hear from you at the Forbidden Panel website, so check us out there. And we are all over the interwebs, just FYI, if you aren't keeping track. Facebook, Pinterest, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, everywhere. So we always love hearing from you, and it's a good way to keep up with what all's going on FP-wise. Speaking of what's going on FP-wise, in a little over a week, AJ and I will be out and about wandering the floor at, what is it, the Long Beach Comic Expo. So if you'd like us to swing by your booth, say hey, maybe chat you up for the next iteration of our podcast, drop us a line, let us know. Or, you know, I'm never really hard to find. 6'4", big black dude with dreads walking around. I'm kind of a noticeable target over a crowd. So you can always just pick us out of the crowd and come up and say, hey, we'd love to hear from you.
And don't worry, that's just his cosplay. He's really 5'4" and white.
I'm not going to offend anybody by saying anything to that. I'm going to let AJ do it for me. So
I have been hired to be somebody's Luther. So beware of that. And if you can't make it out to Long Beach and you really want to see what's going on there, that would be the opportune time to check out our Instagram, because we'll be posting a lot of photos from the floor of Long Beach Comic Expo there. And I will promise to put embarrassing pictures of Anthony on it.
I'm going to try to avoid that this time around. I haven't had the greatest of luck, but I'm still going to try. So, for AJ, this is Anthony saying good night to everybody, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
PanelCast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.